This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joy podcast from LGBTQIA+ community radio station, Joy 94.9. For more information and tons of other podcasts, head to joy.org.au.
That's right. We're incredibly lucky to have Richard Watts on the line, and Richard is prolific in himself. He's incredibly well known in the Melbourne arts community.
Absolutely.
Contributes just across the board. Many people know him as the presenter of Smart Arts, which is on Triple R.
Absolutely. He interviewed me for The Art Hunter.
Yeah.
Yes.
He sets the standard. He's an arts writer. He writes with Arts Hub. He's been awarded some pretty incredible memberships and accreditations.
Yep.
And I mean, he can tell us all about that himself.
Of course.
Richard, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Hello, Eve. Hello, David. A pleasure to be joining you this afternoon.
It's our pleasure to have you on, Richard, because you are, as I've actually called you in our little promo thing, the voice of the arts in Melbourne.
Deserved
well,
to.
Let's say one of the voices of the arts in Melbourne. It's, I think the thing about this city is that in the same way that we have an arts ecology that involves everything from the Melbourne Theatre Company and the Melbourne Symphony Orchestra down to independent artists and small to medium companies who all make up kind of that part of the arts, the arts media scene, the arts landscape equally includes people like yourselves, me, The Age, where Nick Miller is the arts editor, and a range of other commentators and writers as well. So we all play, I think, an important part, and we all comment on different aspects of the arts to ensure that the things that are important, the things that are remarkable and groundbreaking, don't get overlooked, and that we all get to, you included, get to communicate our passion about why the arts matter to the broader public.
Yeah, and that you stand a lot higher than most people, Richard, and you're being very humble, including everyone else, but let's stick with that anyway. Now, Nirvana, tell us, what's your memory and what's your thoughts on Nevermind, the album that is celebrating 30 years this last week?
Well, look, I am obviously slightly biased. I'm in my early 50s, so I saw Nirvana live at the Palace in St Kilda back on their Australian tour.
Yep.
And that album was hugely significant in a lot of ways, partially because it's musically, it's a blending of metal, of punk, and also of pop music.
Yep.
And they are blended beautifully together, both in the songs and also in the mixing and the way the album has been recorded and produced. And also what happened at that point in time was record companies who for a long time had ignored so-called alternative music suddenly started paying attention to it, to the point where I still remember with shock, I was in the change rooms at the Northcote swimming pool, having just swum a few laps, and Nirvana was being played on Triple M, and it was gobsmacking because the commercial radio stations at that time did not play the kind of music that I was hearing on Triple R and PBS, that I was hearing in independent and underground clubs. The popularity of Nirvana made record companies suddenly go, oh, we could all sign the next act like this who will cross genres, cross generations, and from the record company's perspective, make them an enormous amount of money, which is why Australian bands like Something for Kate and Silverchair were suddenly signed, and every record company suddenly had an alternative label or an alternative group of bands signed, to the point where alternative became a genre unto itself. Yep. Previously, you'd listened to punk, you'd listened to goth, you'd listened to whatever genre it might be. Now you went into a record store, back in the days when people went into record stores, and there was an alternative music category, which included everything from Smashing Pumpkins and Pop Will Eat Itself to the Sisters of Mercy and everything in between. So Nirvana, and in particular Nevermind, were hugely groundbreaking. That said, I'm sure there were plenty of people who listened to Nirvana and other bands on the Sub Pop label previously who'd gone, why are you all suddenly excited about the bands we've been listening to for five or 6 years?
True.
What's going
true.
On?
True. Well, and that was the importance of Triple R. Because Triple R were, the forerunners of a lot of that music. And I can remember I was working for a record company there, and it was really important because the record label that I was with at one stage, we relied heavily on the support of Triple R. But what you were saying about, the record companies jumping on the bandwagon with, that whole style of music, they're still doing it. That's the thing that really is frustrating. And coming from the record company background that I have, is that they're still doing it. They haven't got people. They wait until a little indie label releases something that's groundbreaking. Well, it's so-called groundbreaking, and next minute they're snapping it up and wanting it, or trying to find the next one. It's very frustrating in that front.
It's slightly surreal in that regard that some people do all the work going to see, I guess, scouting out the little bands who are playing venues around town back in the day when, as we like to call it, the before times at the moment, when you could go to a pub almost any night of the week and see a band play. And that will return once we've all been vaccinated and once COVID is a more manageable kind of disease. But yes, I have always felt a little bit of frustration I've never run a record label myself, but if you ran an independent record label in Australia in the late 80s, early 90s, and suddenly the bands that you had spent time developing and scouting out and signing and releasing their first album or their first single or EP, whatever it might be, to have them suddenly snapped up by a major record label who had not previously demonstrated any interest or support of these music scenes, but were only interested in the next cash cow. You can understand why there would be enormous frustration and why the claim of selling out used to get bandied around a lot in the music scene.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the main reason we got you on today is that on Sunday Arts Magazine here, we're here to support the arts. And in the last few months, it's been unbelievably frustrating with the amount of interviews that we'd lined up. Because the lovely thing is that we don't have a problem getting people wanting to chat to us about a gallery or a gig that they're doing or a live theatre, but at present, so many people are dropping out because, they just realize they can't, do it, or they don't have the facilities. Although last week we spoke to a couple of cabaret performers who are doing a brilliant job with their online, and it was inspiring hearing them. But I'm just getting so frustrated, Richard, with and saddened, so saddened for the arts industry that either things have been lost forever or they've been moved to next year, middle of next year or March or April of next year. And, the poor old Fringe Festival, here we are, second year that they're going through this. A lot of the shows are still going, but a lot have been put on hold. What's your thoughts?
Oh, look, I'm sure that, David, that you and Eve, you as well, the number of interviews that we've lined up that have had to be cancelled because artists have had to cancel their shows because of lockdown is enormously frustrating. I've got tickets booked for shows at Comedy Republic in Bourke Street, the new comedy venue that opened, I think it was late last year. And then at this year's Melbourne International Comedy Festival was suddenly the new focus of attention. It was the best venue to hang out in the city after work before seeing shows, even if you weren't seeing shows there. I've got tickets for a show that's now been rescheduled, I think, three times because of the ongoing lockdown. So It's frustrating for us, but from the artist's perspective, even more frustrating. One of the challenges being that when venues do start to open up, and they will, they absolutely will, I have no doubt of that, but if you're a playwright whose major work had been in development for a couple of years and was meant to be staged this year, it's perhaps there's no guarantee that it's going to be rescheduled for 2022 because yep. the theatre companies will already have other works in development in the pipeline that they want to stage.
True.
They will have works that had already had a significant number of bookings for this year, and so perhaps those might take priority. If you've written a very dark, bleak personal drama in 2022, I suspect quite a few theatre companies, and I'm talking the major theatre companies, so here in Melbourne, the Malthouse, the MTC, they might be thinking, maybe we don't want bleak, dark, hard-hitting drama. Mm. Let's program a year of light, happy, celebratory, joyful work. Mm. So we'll put on a musical or two. We'll put on some comedy. So if you've written a fairly hard-hitting piece of drama, are you going to have to wait for your play that was supposed to premiere in 2021 to premiere in 2023, 2024? Mm. It's an enormously challenging situation for artists of all stripes, for playwrights, for directors, for actors, and of course also for the theatre companies, for the dance companies.
Yep.
I mean, just thinking about the Malthouse, for example, they had the work Monsters that was...
Yep.
Created in association with the Stephanie Lake Company that was supposed to premiere in September. So that's impacting on the dance sector and the theatre sector, for example. And it was also going to star Pamela Rabe, the actor who many people would know from stage performance, but also from the TV show Wentworth, for example. So we're seeing a huge impact on the sector. And yes, everybody's currently focused on the future, but the future at the moment is so uncertain. We don't know when these productions will be able to be restaged. At the moment, we don't even know when people can get back into a rehearsal room, which is
true,
also
yes.
enormously challenging.
Yep. I read a story on that the other day saying, okay, the roadmap saying that in November, the theatres, but they have to rehearse again. And a band has to rehearse to go out on the road as well. Haven't been able to do it. Okay, we can do it. Zoom it, but it's not the same being in the same room, in especially a play. If you're rehearsing a play, you've got to be together to do that.
And equally for dance companies
yeah,
as well, whether it's the Australian Ballet, yeah. whether it's a company like Philip Adams Ballet Lab, for example, or
yep.
again, whether it's smaller individual dancers who might be hoping to get something up at Dance House in Carlton. To be in the room is so essential, because particularly for a physical art form like dance or like circus, the director needs to be able to see the person in the room. They need to be able to kind of look at movement. The choreographer, if they're not choreographing themselves, needs to be able to look at every single movement of the body, the body on the floor, the body as it moves around the room, the collaboration between dancers, for example. So, yes, while the Victorian government is mapping out a roadmap for us, and I believe it's around the 5th of November that entertainment venues can open up their doors to up to 150 fully vaccinated patrons, to get to that point, people need to be able to be in the rehearsal room together, as you say. Whether they're a band, whether they're actors, whether they're dancers, whether they're circus performers, whatever the art form is, people need to be able to come together to prepare for that, because we've all been sitting alone at home. We've forgotten to an extent how to make music together, whether that is literally making music together or whether that is the music that happens when well-trained performers, whatever their stripes, are in a room together and creating sparks and bouncing off one another. Mm. And that could be comedy, cabaret, theatre, dance, whatever it may be.
Mm. Well, we've got to take a quick little break. We've got an important message. But But I'd like to come back and talk to you about La Mama, because I know how involved you are there, and see what's happening with a really important theatre here in Melbourne, the tragedy of the fire. But we've got this quick message, and we'll be back with Richard Watts in a moment. You're on Sunday Arts Magazine. Now, as I mentioned before the break, you're on the board of La Mama, is that right?
That's correct. I'm the chair of the Volunteer Committee of Management at La Mama in Carlton, where we've been anxiously and quite, I have to say, quite joyfully watching our theatre being slowly rebuilt.
Great. Yeah. How far along is it, Richard?
Look, it's almost complete. We were, if it wasn't for the current lockdown extension and the impact on having construction site workers on site, we might almost have been finished at literally as I speak. But at the moment, what we're thinking is it will be November before all the final bits and pieces can be kind of signed off and sealed. So we're talking about, for example, the installation. We're installing a lift from street level up into the forecourt of La Mama to ensure that the building is fully accessible.
Great.
And that also then means that instead of people perhaps struggling up a couple of steps to get into the theatre, those steps have been removed and the forecourt has been raised so that everybody will be equal and on the same level when they come into La Mama Theatre in Carlton. That's something that's really important to us, that the theatre be accessible. It's an old building that was over 100 years old, so it hadn't previously been accessible. We're also installing a general access lift because we've built an extension of the original heritage building, and so that will house the office staff and also a dedicated rehearsal space for the first time in La Mama's history. And again, a lift will mean that the green room upstairs, the staff offices upstairs will all be fully accessible, and a walkway is going to be linking the two buildings. So really excited to have all that happening. We were planning to reopen with what we were going to call our Banksia Festival, or the Warrack Festival, Banksia being a flower which needs fire to regenerate. So when a bushfire burns through a region, Banksias use the fire to fertilize and grow, and we thought that was a beautiful, I guess, a beautiful encapsulation of what we're hoping La Mama will do after the fire. The fire has allowed us to grow for the first time in over 50 years in terms of building on the site. Our growth has been ongoing in terms of audience development and artist development and working with communities and so forth. But the fire and the growth that is associated with that, we look forward to welcoming all of Melbourne's communities into the new La Mama Theatre, hopefully later in the year at this stage.
Okay.
Obviously with the roadmap process, but by December, with fingers and toes crossed, we should be back open and running again, and yeah, welcoming people into the space to perform and to see intimate theatre at its best. There's no room for artifice at La Mama. It's a theatre that holds 30 to 40 people, so the actors are right in front of you.
Yeah.
So for actors and audiences alike, there's just something magic that happens in those kind of circumstances. So brilliant. It's been a bit of a long road. It's been 3 years.
Yeah.
But we're almost there.
Fantastic, fantastic. And what does it do for you, Richard? You know, like being so close to a company like La Mama, well, not a company, an organisation like La Mama. You know, like it's been a hard road, and you know, like it's the reputation though of La Mama is, you know, everyone knows it, and people around Australia know La Mama. It really is something a little bit special, isn't it?
It really is. It's one of the jewels in the crown of Melbourne. I would put La Mama in the same tier as places like the MCG, for example.
Yep.
Interstate visitors come, and there are certain places they want to see and they want to go to. Now, La Mama may not be as well-known interstate as the MCG, but I would absolutely say that it is of the same significance in terms of the art that has been made there, the artists that have learned their craft there and gone on to perform internationally, in the case of Cate Blanchett, for example. So it's a gem of a theatre, it really is. It's quirky, it's strange, just as Melbourne is in some ways as well, but it's got such a vibrant and vital community around it. And for me, being the chair of the Committee of Management is an enormous honour, and it's something that I certainly don't take for granted. My role as chair involves talking to government, supporting the staff, and to a degree, representing La Mama to the broader community, just as I'm doing now. So once our doors reopen, hopefully in December, if all things go according to plan, perhaps even November, then we would absolutely welcome everybody back. Every year for Midsummer, La Mama stages exciting and new queer theatre work. We stage work for the Comedy Festival. We stage work all year round, and the community is absolutely welcome back to join us for a drink and a show, and to stand in the courtyard around the bonfire in winter talking about what they've seen, which for me is one of the most magic parts of La Mama. You get to talk to the actors you've just seen on stage. You get to share your joy with them. And speaking of sharing joys, I really should plug the fact that people can become members of Joy, $84 or $42 concession, or $22 if you're under 18. Joy family as well.
And thank you. Now, listen, you mentioned the MCG, sport, sport seems to be trumping us within the arts. What do you think? The state government here have been very supportive of the arts, and always has been, and especially this Labor government. But the federal government have been really playing with the arts a lot in the last couple of years. Do you think the arts is getting a fair share of what's going on right now?
I don't. No, I absolutely don't. Now, I don't have the statistics to hand, but I can tell you that more people work in the arts and cultural industries than work in the mining sector.
Yep.
But more money gets thrown at the mining sector, and I suspect more money gets kind of poured into other areas as well. And I think that's partially because historically the arts haven't necessarily been great at talking about the value of the arts. We've tried to talk about the value of the arts in neoliberal terms, in terms of box office and numbers and the economy, but what the arts haven't been so great at talking about is the impact of the arts in terms of, well, a great example, there's a theatre company based in Sydney, Australian Theatre for Young People, ATYP, whose research shows that participating in theatre programs for young people has more impact on lessening their anxiety levels and greater impact on supporting their mental health than targeted programs designed to decrease anxiety in young people. There are similar programs which show that if young people take part in circus programs, that the training and the resilience and the sense of controlled risk that they explore has a hugely beneficial impact on their mental health. And if governments were to spend more money on the arts, I believe the figure, and as I said, I don't have the figures in front of me right now, but for every $1 spent on arts programs, the government would save $4 in mental health support for future generations.
Yeah.
So the arts have real kind of cultural and social value. And then, of course, there's the value that we get from art in terms of delight and happiness, the aesthetic value. And throughout lockdown, we know that people have turned to the arts in greater numbers than ever before. And when I'm talking about the arts, I don't necessarily mean the Melbourne Symphony Orchestra and the Australian Ballet, for example. I mean a good book, a beautifully written story that is adapted for television. The art of actors and directors who make up the movies that we stream, and the music that we listen to as well. These are all different forms of the art. And then there's the fact that so many people during lockdown have said, right, I'm going to start drawing again or making my own music. I don't have to be good at it. I just want to enjoy it. Mm. And for me, that's one of the most important and critical things that the arts do. The arts bring us personal delight, whether we are practicing them as individuals, just for fun, or whether we are paying money to see somebody who is trained to the peak of their ability to perform on stage for our delight and entertainment. There's so much magic in the arts. And I think, hopefully, the federal government is starting to recognise that. I think there's been an ideological split between art and the coalition for some time. But hopefully, surely, the coalition is starting to realise the love that Australians have for the arts. Mm. And that perhaps they need to do more to support that. And if they don't support that, well, there's an opposition waiting in the wings. So we'll see if they have more to say about the arts.
Yeah. Well, Richard, thank you so much for your insight today on so many topics. It's been a great pleasure speaking to you, and thank you for how much you contribute to the arts here in Victoria.
My absolute pleasure. It's been lovely speaking to you both. And again, just a reminder, go to joy.org.au to sign up as a Joy member if you haven't already.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Richard.
An absolute gem of the arts. That was Richard Watts, who is also a Melbourne Fringe living legend, and you can see absolutely why.
Yep.
You are listening to Joy Sunday Arts Magazine.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community radio station, Joy 94.9. For more podcasts or to support Joy by becoming a member, donating or subscribing, head to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.